This morning, we're joined by a couple of folks from Connecticut DEEP, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, environmental analyst Tom Metzner, and project manager Lee Sawyer, to talk about a number of things, including the comprehensive materials management. There are some changes in the way that things get recycled now, and they're here to fill in the blanks so that you know how things work. Guys, good morning. Thank you for coming in. And Lee, let me start with you about the revised state comprehensive materials management plan. Exactly what is that?
Good morning. Good to be with you. Thank you. So the comprehensive materials management strategy is basically a statewide strategic plan that looks at how we can improve recycling around the state and decrease the disposal of waste. It's really about cutting the cost for municipalities. Connecticut municipalities spend hundreds of millions of dollars per year on trash disposal services, and we'd like to see that number going down. There's also a lot of concern about where we put our trash in the state. A lot of our waste energy facilities that burn the trash are shutting down potentially in the next few years, and we're out of landfill space. So there's a real need to increase recycling.
How does it save money for municipalities?
Well, recycling isn't free, but it's cheaper than trash. So if it gets taken to a recycling facility, that material is being sorted and marketed and sold. So there's usually a cost for the pickup and transportation of that material, but it's a much lower cost than what municipalities are spending for trash, which is typically about $60 a ton for trash, whereas it's about $0 a ton to drop off the recycling at the recycling facility.
What are some of the key elements for the revised state comprehensive materials management plan?
There are basically three main areas. The first, we're looking at how we can support our cities and towns to improve their own recycling programs. So in Connecticut, we have a range of programs depending on the town. There's differences between them. Some towns run their own recycling crews and trucks out to pick up the trash and transfer stations and so on. Others rely on private haulers. Private waste haulers to provide collection services. Some towns achieve a very high recycling rate. We consider a high recycling rate to be about 30 or 40% of the material is being recycled as opposed to disposed, whereas others, particularly some of our higher density urban population cities, may be much lower, about 10 or 15% recycling rate. So we really want to see those cities in particular that are at a lower recycling rate make some improvements.
Do you set a goal, and how do you evaluate that goal?
Sure. The state has there's a statewide goal for 60% diversion from disposal. What that means is a combination of recycling and reducing the amount of waste that we dispose. Currently, the state is at a 30% diversion rate. So we have a pretty lofty goal of 60% to get to by the year 2024. We've tried to look at how that can realistically be achieved. And one of the main areas that we're focusing on is seeking to achieve a 10% waste reduction in every single one of our towns.
Lee, what does this mean to the average citizen? How does it affect their lives? What changes do they have to make?
Well, most citizens have access to some form of recycling, whether it's a curbside container that they can use, or perhaps it's a dumpster if it's outside of a apartment building, or they can go to the transfer station. So we're fortunate in Connecticut compared to a lot of other states. We actually have fairly good access to recycling. I think the key is really understanding what can and can't be recycled, and continually reminding ourselves of why recycling is important, and also teaching kids in school about recycling. That's something that we find very successful. We haven't done as much of that over the past few years, and we're going to start doing more of it. So it's not that you have to pay more or you have to do anything that's not easy to do. We're just looking at how to get the word out about how important recycling is and what types of things you should be putting in your recycling bin.
Let me ask this of either Lee or Tom, but where does Connecticut stand when it comes to the other 49 and now 50 states regarding this whole recycling thing? Are we ahead of the curve? Are we catching up? Are other states doing a better job than we are?
Well, we're actually somewhere in the middle. We're about average as far as states around the country. But there are some things that make our system unique, and one of them is that we are the first state in the country to essentially eliminate the landfilling of trash, of household trash. We still have landfilling for construction and demolition waste and certain other waste, but we made a decision couple decades ago to close up our landfills, and we constructed these trash burning waste energy plants that take in the trash and incinerate it and produce electricity, and we rely very heavily on those facilities, which is considered to be environmentally preferable to landfilling, even though it might seem counterintuitive. Burning trash doesn't sound like the most environmentally friendly approach, but actually if you compare it to the greenhouse gas emissions from methane and other gases that come from landfill, it's actually less impactful to the environment. So we're ahead of the curve in that we rely on waste energy as opposed to landfill. But as far as recycling goes, we're right in the middle of the pack, and we really want to see that improve, especially because we have a lot of the building blocks in place. We have a well-implemented curbside system around the state, and we need to do it because we only have so much space available at these existing trash-burning plants, and some of those plants might be closing over the next few years. So it's very important that we become a leader not just in the trash-to-energy sector but also in recycling.
I mentioned how this would affect the average consumer or resident here in the state. And specifically, there are changes in the way that paint, electronics, and mattresses and tires are recycled or disposed of. So let's talk about that one by one. What are the changes in the way that people can get rid of or recycle paint?
Well, paint has always been a problematic material for people to get rid of. And in the past, we told people if you had latex paint, dry it out. Very unsatisfactory answer for a lot of people. You could bring your oil-based paint to household hazardous waste collections, but sometimes there's only one or two of those per year, and some towns didn't have access to even one. So this is wasn't just a problem for Connecticut. It was a problem for many states in the Northeast and across the country. So we got together, we met with the paint manufacturers, and we asked them to take more responsibility for managing this product. And they agreed. And so we developed a model legislation that we passed in Connecticut. We were the third state to pass that. There's now eight and more in queue. And the manufacturers essentially said, we will manage a system for recovering and recycling paint. So we never recycled a drop of latex paint in this state before 2013. That program started in 2013. They collected 276,000 gallons the first year and 321,000 gallons this year. 77% of it was latex, and they recycled 82% of that. So hundreds of thousands of gallons of paint is now being recycled as opposed to disposed of. And what's interesting is when we first started this program, to kind of get some background, we surveyed Connecticut homeowners. And we asked, do you have leftover paint? Well, we knew the answer was going to be yes. And 90% said, yes, I have leftover. So we asked, how much? And based on what they responded, we estimated between 5 and 6 million cans of paint were sitting in people's garages, sheds, and basements, and they didn't know what to do with it.
In Connecticut?
Just in Connecticut. So, now we have a place to get rid of it. And that program is run by manufacturers. It's financed through a fee at the point of sale that goes to the manufacturer. So when you buy a can of paint now, you're going to pay 35 cents on a pint, 75 cents on a gallon, or $1.60 on a 5-gallon container, and that money goes to the paint manufacturers. They set up a nonprofit called Paint Care, and they make all the arrangements for moving the paint and recycling it. It's all done with the private sector. So the state's role becomes pulled back in this kind of a scenario. So we make sure that what Paint Care is promoting and doing is protective of human health and the environment. We don't have to figure out the details of where paint should go. They tell us that, and we say yes or no. So what you've got with this program is an example of extended producer responsibility. The producer takes responsibility for managing their product through the end of life, when that was primarily a municipal taxpayer-funded responsibility previously. So we're saving money for the municipalities not having to pay for paint going to household hazardous waste or not having to go through incineration. And municipalities pay tipping fees in most municipalities in Connecticut. So we're saving money with that. We're recycling. We're creating private sector jobs. And we're lessening the role of the government. So I think this is a really good program all around. And it's been very successful. Now when people call me and say, how do I get rid of paint? I say, is there a paint store nearby you? Then there's probably a place that you can take it. So all Sherwin-Williams stores participate. There's a website called paintcare.org. You type in your zip code, and it'll let you know where to take it.
And I did that, and our local distribution points are O.L. Willard's, both Willimantic and stores, Sherwin-Williams, Wyndham Transfer Station, Mansfield Transfer Station, Lebanon Transfer Station, Cash True Value, Mansfield Supply. Those are the ones in our immediate area here today. So, okay, I painted my house last week. That'll be the day. And I've got a half a can of paint left over. Just take it into there. Then what happens?
Well, I mean, first we'd like people to try to save it if they can use it. Great. You know, for touch-ups or smaller projects, you want to paint the doghouse or something, that's great. If you find that you're just not going to use it, then you can recycle it through this program. They will recycle it. And as I mentioned, 82%. So even if it's got, you know, a little bit of skin on it and it's starting to solidify on its own, that can be recovered. And even if it can't be recovered, the cost of getting rid of it will be managed through this program, not through your municipal tax dollars. So when you throw something in that solid waste dumpster, your municipal tax dollars in many cases are paying to get rid of it. So we want to get stuff out of there. So that's the beauty of this paint program. And so far, it's like I said, it's been pretty successful.
And that website is paintcare.org. You can surf around from there and get the information that Tom was talking about. How about mattresses? If I got an old mattress, Tom, how do I get rid of it?
Well, similar to the paint, a couple of years ago, we established a program for mattresses. So it's financed by the manufacturers of mattresses. They set up a similar nonprofit. It's called the Mattress Recycling Council. And they charge a fee, or a fee is charged at point of sale. So when you buy a mattress, you're paying $9. And that money goes to the mattress manufacturers in this council. And again, they use that to recycle mattresses. So before this program, there was one small mattress recycling company down in Bridgeport, maybe doing 10,000 mattresses a year. First year of the program, we're already at 150,000 mattresses, created another recycling facility and about 30 to 40 private sector jobs. So instead of throwing them out, which was expensive, now you can recycle them. So this is not a mandatory program for municipalities, but if a municipality wants to join, they get from the financing of this program, they will get an appropriate container. It's filled up with mattresses that people bring in, and then that container is removed. So the only real expense to the municipality is the space of the in their transfer station. The rest is covered by the mattress manufacturers through this fee. Now, not every – so I think at this point we have 111 towns out of 169 that are participating in the program. Wyndham is, and many of the program, Mansfield is, many of the programs – so what town do you live in, Wayne?
Willimantic.
Well, you have access then. In fact, one of the major players in the program is based in Willimantic. Willimantic Waste is a, a beneficiary of this program. They're a contractor under this program. So this is another example of taking a material that was never really recycled to any great extent, recycling it, which is a greater environmental outcome, saving municipalities money. So we've estimated about $1.3 million annually in municipal savings, based on what it costs to get rid of a mattress otherwise. So to get rid of a mattress otherwise, the waste energy plants may take them. They don't like to because the metal springs get caught up in their equipment. In fact, the waste energy plant in Hartford won't take them. And so they're charging like $45 to process a mattress. Now, you can imagine how expensive that would be to a municipality. And this first happened in Hartford. They were looking at $200,000 or $300,000 a year to get rid of mattresses, just to get rid of that one waste. So my good friend, Marilyn Cruz Aponte, who's in Hartford and was in charge of that program, she said, we got to do EPR. So that was really – we were the first state in the country to get a mattress EPR program, and California and Rhode Island have since joined.
Extended producer, responsibility.
Right. I mean, and I believe it's really the way to go. So that we followed with – e-waste was the first one, and we'll get to that. Then we did paint. Then we did mattresses, and we also do thermostats in that way. And so this philosophy, this strategy – is really part of how we're looking in the future. Maybe, Lee, you could talk about how EPR is something that we're looking at in the future through the plan.
Well, that's right. I mean, in addition to getting residents and all of us to do the right thing and recycle what we can, we want to make sure that recycling is more accessible and less expensive for everyone. And EPR is really the path forward on that. We're looking at those successful programs for e-waste, mattresses, and paint, building on that and looking at other materials, perhaps household hazardous waste or consumer packaging is another one the legislature has been looking at. That's a lot of the material that most people recycle in the recycling bin already, but it, like I said before, it's less expensive, but it's not free. So there's opportunity to have the manufacturers of those materials help share responsibility for that recycling system as well. So that's the other kind of big piece of our strategy is looking at how to grow these extended producer responsibility programs into new areas.
So when I go to buy a new mattress, there'll be a charge added to that, which is a factor in this. How does that work?
So, well, it'll be listed on your receipt as $9. It doesn't matter the size of the mattress, doesn't matter how much the mattress cost, but it doesn't include crib mattresses. But it's your standard, you know, full, queen, king, twin mattresses and box springs. So it's $9 per unit because that's what it costs to cover the admin for the mattress program. Run by the manufacturers, and recycling and transportation costs. So they cover all the costs of that program through the purchase price at $9. Now, there are ways you can do EPR without – this is called a cost externalization. So the mattress manufacturer said, we'll do the program, but we don't want to take the money out of our profits. We want to be able to take in the cost of the program through an additional fee. And that was agreed to. Now, you could internalize the cost, which is what's done with the electronics program. If you'd like, I can get into that.
Sure.
Yeah, so the first one we did was in 2007. The law passed. It was implemented in 2011 for electronic waste. And there's just a huge proliferation of gadgets that we were getting rid of. So we transitioned to digital TV a few years ago. All these old TVs became obsolete or at least unwanted. We've moved from CRTs to flat screens, and we know the price has come down. So people are moving through computers and televisions and get rid of them at a prolific rate. So we had to find places to get rid of these. So again, the manufacturers were asked to assume responsibility, and essentially we passed a law, one of the first again in the country, and said manufacturers will assume responsibility. In that case, the cost is not externalized. So there is no fee when you buy a TV. There's no fee when you buy a computer to pay for this program. It's all covered as just another expense of bringing that product to market. So when you bring up any product to market, you have your labor, you have your materials, you have your transportation distribution costs. You have to turn on the lights. Getting rid of the material at the end of life is just another line item in the expense of bringing that product to market. So that e-waste program, we've done 45,000 tons of recycled e-waste since that material that program started in 2011. Created 80 private sector jobs, most of them in Connecticut. And $4 million in avoided disposal costs. So this is a win-win-win with the job creation angle, the municipal cost reduction angle, and the added environmental benefit angle. This is just something that just makes common sense to do it this way.
Let me go back to the $9 charge on mattresses to pay for the recycling. When I go to buy a mattress and they tack that extra $9 on, am I paying state tax on the extra $9 too, or does the store have to do a little bit of special math there to do the tax and then add on the $9?
So this question was asked when the law was written. Is the $9 subject to the sales tax? So the answer is
you
yes.
You said it so much better.
Yeah, it is. It's subject to the sales tax. Should it be? I don't know. That's just what
seems to me like it shouldn't. That's why I asked the question. But I guess I don't have a vote.
I think when the law was written, that should have been addressed a little more clearly. But that's fine. I think the key thing is that you're paying to finance the recovery of that mattress. The state is not getting that $9. It's going to the mattress manufacturer. So this was not – people have the misconception that it's a tax and the state is getting this money. It isn't. And, in fact, I bought a mattress over the summer, and I just kind of went undercover and I said, so what about this $9 fee? Oh, that's a state tax. I said, well, actually it isn't, and I explained why. But still, there's this misperception that we're just trying to get money for ourselves. But that's not the case. We're trying to cover the cost of mattress recycling.
Undercover mattress. I got the pun there. I'm not sure it was designed to be a pun, but I made the connection anyway. Are they actually recycling a mattress or recycling materials in the mattress?
It's So there's two facilities, and it's done in two different ways. One is a little more low-tech, labor-intensive, where they actually kind of fillet it. They take a box cutter, you peel off the top, you recover the box spring, you recover the wood, you separate them, and it is recycled. There are markets for those materials. There is a facility that came as a result of this EPR program in East Hartford that is a little more mechanized. So they throw it into a machine, it kind of peels back the top, peels it off. You're left with just the metal frame, and then you have the wood from the box springs. So yes, all the material, you can recycle, I think, 98% of a mattress. In fact, they'll even take, you know, one of the facilities takes a magnet on a forklift, and it sucks up all the little pieces of nails and everything. And so they recycle those too. So yes, you can recycle virtually all of a mattress. The other thing I wanted to point out is misconception. Well, people will say, well, what if I move out of state? You know, and I take my mattress with me, why should I have to pay that fee? And the answer is, well, because we're financing the mattresses that are being recovered now. So the mattress that I bought that I turned in, there was no fee on that. So we have to pay for the recycling now. We can't wait the 10 years until your mattress is going to be, the average life of mattress is about 10 years. So you're paying now to recycle the mattresses now. It's not a deposit. You don't get your money back if you return the mattress, although there is a $2 incentive if you transport the mattress yourself to the facility. But the best way to get rid of it is go to your transfer station.
What kind of reaction have you gotten from people around the state to this? Obviously, it's costing more money, right. But do they get it that we've got to do this to save the planet and our state?
It's interesting. There's two different approaches. If your first encounter with the program is, hey, I got to recycle my mattress for free when I used to have to pay $20 at my transfer station, you think it's a great program. If your first encounter is you walk in and buy a mattress and say, why do I have to pay $9 when I'm not getting rid of a mattress, you may have a more negative opinion about it. But based on the calls that I've got and talking to people, they like it. They're growing more used to the program. The manufacturers at first resisted the program, but now they're more comfortable with it. So it takes time to work out the kinks, to get the program up and running, and to be ingrained. But I think people will understand that recycling is not free, as Lee has mentioned. So that cost has to be covered somehow. Should we be doing it through the tax and the government figuring out how to do it, or should we be doing it in the more efficient way and to let the manufacturers design and run a system?
If people want more information on this new program specifically regarding mattresses, how do they get it?
The website for the manufacturers is buybuymattress.com. And again, they have a locator function, so you can type in your zip code and figure out where or if your town is participating. Now, if your town is not participating, you might want to ask them why. Because there's still 50 or 60 towns that don't do it. And if you're paying your taxpayer dollars to dispose of a mattress when there's a free option, you might want to ask your town why.
Lee, let me throw out a question to you regarding common mistakes that people do, things that people should do, things people should not do when it comes to the overall recycling concept.
Right. Well, we find that although recycling is usually accessible in one way or another, whether it's at the curb or at the transfer station, people don't always know what they should put in that mixed recycling container or what they shouldn't. So I know I've made my own mistakes. Actually, I think my wife taught me how to recycle, even though my job is to talk about recycling. She's constantly correcting me. So one of the things we're trying to do is get...
Wait, I want to know what you did wrong. DEP guy does things wrong, that should get our attention. So, okay, how did the wife get you in trouble?
You don't want to know.
But I do.
Well, one of the things that that I used to do is I wouldn't worry about rinsing the mayonnaise container or the peanut butter container before I would throw it in the bin. And she told me, think about the fact that someone at the other end of that is going to be sorting that by hand. So make sure you make that clean for them. So that's one of the things we remind people is you don't have to be obsessive about it. You don't have to wash in your dishwasher and make sure it's perfectly clean. But food waste, if it's in a container or any other form in your bin, is going to make a mess at the recycling facility. And it's going to degrade the value of that material. So keeping things clean, taking caps off containers. containers. A lot of people aren't sure if they should take that water bottle cap off and recycle it separately. And the answer is probably yes. It will get recycled either way, but it's all about the value of the material. And the more you can separate the material, the better. So if you take that cap off, it's more likely that both the cap and the bottle will be recycled. With glass, a lot of people, you know, you can put your glass in the recycling bin, but people may not know that if it's deposit glass, if it's your beer bottle or other container that has a nickel deposit on it, it's actually more likely to be successfully recycled if you do return it to the store or to the redemption center. The single stream system, the recycling system at the curb, will take that material, but a lot of that will get broken. It will get mixed in with other materials, and it will degrade the value of those materials. So it's okay to put it in the bin, but if you have the opportunity to redeem that instead of throwing it away, and I know for a lot of people, the nickel may not seem like much, so you may just throw it in your recycling bin for convenience. But if you can take it to the store or give it to somebody else who wants to redeem it, that's a better way to go.
Well, what about broken glass? All right, you've got a dinner glass, you drop it, it breaks, you scoop up the pieces. Is that recyclable?
If it's broken plate glass, usually not. So anything that's glass except for container glass. If it's container glass, if it's a jar or a bottle of some kind, it is recyclable even if it's broken. You can put it in the bin if it's broken. When it goes to the recycling facility, they're actually going to break it. The machinery itself will break it, and it will get broken up and go through screens and be collected together as broken pieces. So it's okay if it's broken, but most recycling facilities do not want plate glass or other types of glass. They're just looking for that container glass. Another thing that people don't always know is that if it's certain kinds of paper, like your junk mail, a lot of people throw away their mail instead of recycling it because they think if it's inside an envelope, maybe it doesn't get recycled. Anything paper is recyclable, whether it's torn, folded, inside an envelope, throw it in your recycling bin, it will get recycled.
What about window envelopes?
If you want to be really good at recycling, you actually take that little window out. But whether you do or you don't, it will get recycled. Again, it goes to the value of the material. If you take the window out and throw the window away, then recycle the rest, it gives a higher value material to that recycling facility. They're going to be paid more for that paper.
Tom, we had a good discussion earlier about these new programs involving recycling paint and mattresses. We made a quick reference to electronics. What's the best way to properly dispose of electronics, including old TVs?
Well, unlike the other programs, the e-waste program is a mandatory program for municipalities, but again, they don't pay for it. So they have a container, usually at a transfer station. You can go there. Now, if you don't have a transfer station sticker and you just want to recycle electronics, you can go there for free. As long as you're a resident, you don't have to buy a sticker just to recycle the electronics. So take it to your transfer station. Now, some towns may collect larger TVs and things like that at the curb, so check with your town what the standard procedure is. So every town might be a little different. Check with your towns, but every town is required to provide you with a way to recycle an old TV, computer, printer, or monitor at no expense to you. So check with your town, but usually it's transfer station related.
All right, what about these old tires I got hanging around the garage? What's the best way to get rid of those?
Well, we don't have unlike the other programs for EPR, we don't have an EPR program for tires yet. It's on my wish list, but tires are a very difficult material to recover. And in fact, the markets for tires for Connecticut are two pulp mills up in Maine, which we're competing with the Boston market. We're competing with as far away as Michigan for that limited space. So there's very limited markets to get rid of tires. And unfortunately, the cheapest way to get rid of a tire legally is to burn it. Tire-derived fuel, it's called. So there's very little tire recycling going on. Now, if you were to do an EPR program for tires, like they do in Canada, in Ontario, they don't burn any tires. They recycle 100%. They created 200 private sector jobs, and they saved millions of dollars for municipalities in disposal costs. And they virtually eliminated illegal dumping. So we could do all that here. So that's next, or that's on the vision for the future of what we could do with EPR. So EPR represents what's possible for tires, as opposed to what we're doing right now, which is essentially trying to find markets to burn them. And costs are going up, and the tire processors in Connecticut are strapped trying to find markets. The markets are not secure. So if we could get an EPR program, the tire manufacturers would have the incentive to develop markets. It would be their responsibility because they got to move these tires. They'll put the money into R&D, just like they did in Canada. And they will help develop ways to make a tire more recyclable and to figure out better markets for it. So we don't have anything yet. If you want to get rid of a tire, you do it yourself or you have your tire, transfer stations will take them. But again, they're paying to get rid of them. So it's not free, and they're going to charge you. And part of the problem with being charged is some of the larger garages that are unscrupulous may unknowingly hand their tires off to a transporter who says, well, I'll do it at less than market. And then they're illegally dumping them. Or they're calling out the ones that have resale value and illegally dumping the rest. So garages or places that generate tires should be very careful with who they give their tires to and who's, what they say they're going to do with them.
So would there be a plan maybe down the road like you have with mattresses where you pay that extra charge up front when you buy tires to help with the recycling of tires?
You could do it that way, or you could, as I explained earlier, you could internalize the cost. So there's two models for that. One is that the tire manufacturers would be allowed to charge a fee, which if you base it on Canada would be in the neighborhood of $2 or $3. And that money would go towards recycling and collection and moving the tires. Or you could do for a cost internalization model, which I believe Ontario and most of Canada is moving to, so that the cost – there is no external fee. It is just another cost of bringing that tire to market.
And how about the challenge of batteries? What's the best way to dispose of them, and can they be recycled?
The household batteries. So the rechargeable batteries, there is a program for that, usually at retail outlets like Best Buy and Home Depot. You can recycle rechargeable batteries. That's your cell phone batteries, your power tool batteries, anything that's rechargeable. The household alkaline batteries – we've been working with the manufacturers to try to establish an EPR program. The details got bogged down in the details, and we weren't able to get a legislation through. But it's on the horizon. I think it'll happen. It's just a matter of time so that you can recycle all your batteries through these drop sites, be they transfer stations or retail outlets. But we're not there yet. Give that a couple years. I think that'll happen too. But for now, there's people should understand there's nothing particularly hazardous within your household alkaline battery. So they can safely go in the garbage, although recycling is a better option. It's just not really economically viable within this region right now.
What if they're in a Samsung phone?
Yeah.
All right,
call
cheap
the fire
shot. Yeah, really. What is product stewardship?
Well, broadly speaking, product stewardship really means just the sort of a shared effort on the part of producers as well as others to steward materials to their best end use. So it includes programs like extended producer responsibility, where you have producers taking direct responsibility and funding recycling programs. But it could also be voluntary programs where industries agree to help promote recycling. For example, right now in Connecticut, we're working with the American Chemistry Council and some others on a program to promote the recycling of plastic bags. So a lot of people think they can put their plastic bags in the recycling bin. They really don't belong there. They should go back to the store, and a lot of stores have collection points for plastic shopping bags. And that's something that the store has taken some responsibility in, and this other program called RAP, where the American Chemistry Council and some of the others involved in the manufacture of plastic bags are voluntarily partnering with the state to help promote the collection and recycling of those items. So essentially, producer responsibility is about partnerships between government and private industries to promote the proper end life management of a material and the recycling of a material.
If I could expand on that, so product stewardship is a broader concept that a manufacturer should take greater environmental responsibility upstream. So that's with product design, resource extraction, greenhouse gases, energy. So looking at all functions of the product, production of that product to see where they can create better environmental outcomes. end of life after the product has been sold and used is still part of product stewardship, but it's more specifically defined as extended producer responsibility. So extended producer responsibility is a subset of greater product stewardship.
Tom, environmental analyst, what is your main responsibility at DEEP?
Well, I have several. Mostly the EPR programs that we've talked about, the minimal administration that is responsible, reviewing reports, making sure the plan is being followed. That's my responsibility. Also, I have responsibility for our mercury products legislation. So we have very comprehensive mercury product bans. Thermostats can't have mercury in them. So we administer that program as well. And basic waste planning, hazardous waste and solid waste planning functions.
And Lee, project manager, would that be the project of extended producer responsibility, or what project are we talking about? Or are we talking about several projects?
Well, there's a couple, but it encompasses basically this comprehensive material strategy that we've written. I helped draft that and worked with folks in the department as well as residents about what to put in that strategy. We do several waste studies. We do studies where we actually go out and sample trash and see what the composition of the trash is every 3 to 5 years. So I helped coordinate and manage those studies, which all were incorporated into our comprehensive plan. The other big priority that I have is helping to determine how we can bring the right type of infrastructure into the state to replace some of these waste energy facilities that we know are going to be phasing out over the next few years. So right now we have a big project in Hartford where the state is looking to revamp and restore the facility that's there. That's an old, it used to be a coal-fired power plant that was transitioned to be a waste energy plant using some very old technology that needs to be upgraded. So we're in the middle of a process right now to seek a developer to come in and do that to make sure we maintain that as a resource, as infrastructure for the state, but also move it towards a system that is pulling more recycled material out of the trash before it's incinerated. So we're looking there in Hartford, and we're also looking elsewhere in the state for where we can promote the development of new technologies, more innovative approaches to waste. And so that's where I'm spending a lot of my time.
And Tom, you've used the word thermostat twice here this morning, and that wasn't on my game plan here for today, but what's the challenge of recycling or disposing of thermostats? It may not be something we all do very often, but apparently there's an issue there.
Well, it's the older ones that have mercury in them, so very carefully, if you were to remove the plate on that old round brown Honeywell thermostat, you would see an ampule with about 3 to 5 grams of mercury, which for how toxic it is, that's a lot. So we want to make sure that those are properly disposed of. If you put it in the garbage, we're in incineration state, our garbage gets burned, that mercury can be released. And that causes all kinds of problems in the environment with fish contamination. So there is a thermostat recycling program run by manufacturers through household hazardous waste drop-offs and wholesalers, electrical wholesalers. That have to participate in the program. So we visited a few of these wholesalers, and they will gladly take your mercury thermostat. If you go to TRC, Thermostat Recycling, I don't know the exact website, but Thermostat Recycling Corporation, and you can find where the participating places are to recycle a mercury thermostat, but they should not go in the garbage.
Good discussion of recycling and some of the new laws and regulations regarding paint and tires and mattresses, electronics. With our guest this morning, that was Tom Metzner from Connecticut DEEP, environmental analyst, and project manager Lee Sawyer from DEEP discussing recycling. Guys, great job. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Great to be here.